If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
Welcome back to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Having personally experienced narcissistic abuse, our next guest has channeled her own journey of survival and healing into her work as a psychotherapist. I'm really excited for you guys to hear our interview that we've done with Vanessa Reiser. She has become a leading authority on narcissistic personality disorders and specializes in supporting victims and survivors of domestic violence and other forms of narcissistic abuse. Some of you may recognize Vanessa from recent news headlines when she filed a restraining order against her ex-fiancé, Louis Roulas, of Housewives of New Jersey, after alleging that he had hired a private investigator, Bo Deedle, to stalk her in her place of business. Today, she will tell us what it was like to run 285 miles across the state of New York. I think it took her 11 days, and all the while wearing a wedding dress. She will discuss her relationship red flags, share her invaluable insights, offer guidance, and help us navigate the complex terrain of narcissistic abuse. And most importantly, she will tell us her story in her own words. So without further ado, let's welcome to our show, Vanessa Reiser. Vanessa Reiser, welcome to Misunderstood. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm really excited to meet you because I think this topic is really important about narcissistic abuse and toxic relationships. I think it's a really misunderstood topic. I think a lot of people suffer from these kind of relationships and don't know how to navigate them. They don't know how to get out of them, if that's what the right thing is to do. But obviously, before we get into that, I just for a minute just want to talk about your background and how you got into this line of work.
Yeah, so I got my master's at 42 years old, so a little later in life. And I was working in the Bronx at an outpatient mental health clinic. It was very triage style, and also working at the Bronx High School of Science and High School of American Studies as a school social worker. And I really loved it and fell into a toxic relationship And that sort of catapulted me into studying personality disorders. So I now kind of work alongside some of the experts in the field that are dealing with clients that are narcissistically abused.
Right. So let's just talk about that for one second, because obviously your name is somebody that people recognize now, and we don't need to get into, you know, who your issues are with. But I do need to touch on the subject of the fact that you've been in the press recently because of all this drama. And my show really does not go into the housewives and doesn't go into all this stuff. But I do need to ask, you know, because I know your lawyer has commented on the fact that you recently had to get a restraining order against your ex. What are your thoughts on it? What can you tell us what happened from your words instead of from your lawyer?
I can't really get into too much about that. Anything that's already printed is pretty easily and readily available. And people can kind of look into that. But as far as anything moving forward, I can't really get into the specifics on what's currently sort of being dealt with.
Yeah. So we don't need to talk about what's going on in going forward, but can you discuss at all what happened that made you have to get a restraining order?
I can't talk about that. I can talk about, like, as I said, stuff that was already printed. So, you know, in the past, in this relationship, I fled the relationship, and there were some things that occurred in the courts in terms of my business being taken over and him spitting on me, calling me a fat whore, bleaching my clothing, telling me my dead father was a loser. So some of these things have been printed in terms of what was an abusive relationship in my world. But in terms of what's going on lately, my attorney would help me.
Okay. So was that the first time you had been in a abusive relationship?
No. I think looking back, you know, in hindsight, having reflected now, I think there were probably at least two others that I recall being probably very dangerous. And not realizing it at the time that they were a lot of parallels with this particular relationship. So I think it's very common for people to, a lot of my clients present as having gone through it multiple times. I think until you sort of do the work and understand what it is and how to create boundaries, you become susceptible to this time and time again.
So let's get into that then. Can you explain what exactly narcissistic abuse is and how it differs from other forms of abuse?
Yeah. So narcissistic abuse is an insidious form of domestic violence. This is where somebody isolates you, intimidates you, manipulates you, love bombs you, future fakes. They isolate you. They lie. They cheat. And they kind of mind control you. We see this a lot in cults. It's really no different. Every cult is led by a narcissist, a sociopath, or a psychopath, or some version of the three of those, or two. Sometimes they are histrionic. So I aim to sort of highlight the clinical components that are involved in this. So, you know, these are people that are cult leaders are generally, when you're in a relationship with a narcissist, you're in a cult of one. Are there people on the periphery that are sort of cultivating the relationship and perpetuating the narrative? Yes. But it's really the same exact experience.
What is your version of what trauma bonding is? People talk a lot about that right now.
Trauma bonding is what happens in the beginning of the relationship is this love bombing phase. And then you have a devaluing phase, and then you have a discard phase, but it does repeat. So the love bombing phase on the second cycle is the makeup phase. So this is the makeup phase. Everything is okay. And then there's the tension building phase. This is the devaluing stage. And then the discard phase, which is the fallout. So it's the makeup, tension building, fallout, makeup, tension building, fallout. It happens on repeat. And what happens is you develop an addiction to the makeup phase or the love bombing phase. So that's the trauma bond. You're looking for that fix again. Are they going to make it okay? In my case, when I fled, I shook physically for 9 days because I was waiting for it to get fixed again. Is it going to be made better? And so they liken it. There's a lot of studies now around a drug addiction. So this, you're addicted to the serotonin, this dopamine upkick that you get from it being sort of fixed. And, you know, it's really very similar to having a drug fix.
So I feel like I've been in relationships like this. Like I remember, well, first of all, I'm a love addict for sure. And then, you know, I identify with people who, you know, kind of come in and save the day and all these things. And I sort of put a bag over the head of someone who just, you know, is not right for me, shows all sorts of red flags, but then I just want to make them into this white knight, you know? So it's like, for me, I've gone through circumstances where, you know, we've done this makeup, breakup, and it's really sort of abusive and like a lot of shaming and making me feel like I almost need them to move forward with a lot of things. And if I don't have them, I'm not worth anything. And then when they do come back, it almost feels like, oh, thank God, you know, even though if I had any self-worth at that time, I would be like, why would I ever be with a guy like this? But I think that's really hard to break that cycle. How do you suggest that people break the cycle of getting out of that and not craving that fix that you're talking about, or the honeymoon phase, or they always know that things will get better, or they're hoping that things will get better?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cognitive behavioral therapy that helps in this regard as it relates to breaking the trauma bond. So that's going to include developing a list of things that you really love about yourself. So you want to step into your power, because as you mentioned, there's this like sort of theme of low self-esteem that even though you may think everything's okay, you're attaching your self-esteem to others. You tend to be maybe a people pleaser or an approval seeker. So I see this a lot with my clients. So developing a really strong, robust list of things that you love about yourself. It could be anything you've built mastery around. You know, it could be a degree or a medal or something you want to sort of remember, even if there were something you could put up physically in your home, a picture of yourself that you really think is beautiful or things like this. You want to kind of make it very concrete. So it's about stepping into your power. And then you want to also create a list of things that this asshole did to you. And you want to remember it, because oftentimes we have these rose colored glasses and we sort of forget, you know, conveniently that they, you know, left you somewhere or that they did something that was rather abusive. So you want to have that at the ready as a resource to kind of tap into. And you can do this with friends. You can do this with colleagues. It doesn't have to be an intimate partnership. Mm-hmm. It could be a neighbor, a work associate. Sometimes we sort of, to make our lives easy, we take the path of least resistance and sort of forgive and forget and move on, because it's just, it's a lot of easier to do that than develop a boundary. But people need to remember what has occurred. You know, sometimes we just gloss over it and you want to look for patterns. But I think those two things, developing a list of things you love about yourself, and that list also needs to not be contingent upon how others see you or view you. So this is something like funny, creative, smart, not caring and loving, because those things, while they're really wonderful, are still contingent upon how other people experience you. So it has to be really about you, almost as if you're going to be a little narcissistic for this exercise.
Right, right. I still think that's really hard for someone who's so deep in it to like say, let me think of all the good things about me and then I'm okay to walk away. Obviously it's harder said than done. I want to talk about red flags for a second, but in my opinion, the biggest red flag is looking in at yourself. It's almost the red flag that you give off when you start to lie for the other person, lie about the other person to people to make it okay. For me, that's when I know that something is wrong. Because I've heard myself do it. I've made things okay. And I have a couple friends that I can think of right now who are in those relationships and they're constantly lying for the other person. And that to me is like the biggest red flag of like, guys, this is not okay. But I hear their excuses of like, oh, but he's so good with my kid. Oh, but we have the best sexual connection. And oh, he was just angry about something at work. And oh, he just is having problems drinking too much. You know, when you're an alcoholic or you drink too much, that only brings out more of who you are. It doesn't make you an abuser, right? So what are some red flags that people should be looking out for in their own relationships and even in others if they want to spot it?
Yeah, I think if you are feeling like you're being isolated, mm-hmm. If you are losing your autonomy, so you don't do the hobbies that you once enjoyed, if you feel you're getting involved in conversations that are rather circular, so this is like the word salad where you maybe are misfiring even or becoming really confused, so that's a potential that you're being gaslit. Mm-hmm. If you catch somebody in a lie, if there's love bombing and it's so over the top and so fast moving, love bombing is tricky because somebody could just be, you know, sort of excited about the beginning of a relationship. Love bombing only becomes love bombing when the devaluing starts, or something, sort of the passive aggressive behaviors or silent treatment begin, because that's what love bombing is. It doesn't stand alone. It always has the devaluing attached to it. That's how you identify it. So it's tricky because you only see it in the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. But there's inconsistencies. So if you see inconsistencies in communication, people making excuses. So feeling controlled, if you feel like, you know, quote unquote, something is wrong, mm-hmm. Then something might be wrong.
Right. Okay, guys, I'm so excited to tell you about our new sponsor, Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills all in one place. Literally, the day I started using Rocket Money, just a few days ago, they were able to find hundreds of dollars in monthly subscriptions that I did not even know I had. Literally hundreds. I was absolutely shocked and amazed by this. Every month, I'm like, where's all my extra money going? Now I know. Rocket Money showed me that I had been paying for a monthly credit monitoring system that I did not know about and hadn't been taking advantage of. It also broke down those little transactions that are frequent but seem innocent, such as those daily trips to Starbucks, which can quickly add up to hundreds of dollars. Between my daughter Wyatt and I, we've been single-handedly keeping Starbucks in business, and I will definitely have to be cutting back on those coffee trips. I was so excited about Rocket Money that I even told my producer Kelly all about it, and now she's a member as well. She has already found a ton of ways to save money she didn't even know she was spending. She's a single mother, and so am I. So taking control of where our money is going each month is so important. Over 80% of people have subscriptions they forgot about, and chances are you are one of them. Like that Stars app just to watch one show, or the free gaming trial you never actually used. Rocket Money will quickly and easily find subscriptions for you, and for any you don't want to pay for anymore, just hit cancel and Rocket Money will cancel it for you. It's that easy. Rocket Money also helps you manage all your finances in one place, automatically categorizes your expenses so you can quickly and easily track your budget in real time and also get alerted if anything looks off. Over 3 million people have used Rocket Money, saving the average person up to $720 a year. I'm not kidding you guys. When I got a trial for this and started, I was blown away. I love this app. I hope you try it because you are going to be obsessed and you are going to be happy that you did. Stop throwing away your money, cancel unwanted subscriptions, manage your expenses the easy way by going to rocketmoney.com/understood. That's rocketmoney.com/understood. rocketmoney.com/understood. So can we talk a little bit about the behaviors that are abusive that people might not know are abusive, like what you mentioned, silent treatment, gaslighting. Some people don't even know the meaning of that. Will you talk about those?
Sure. So gaslighting is when somebody sort of takes your truth and you know, swirls it around and makes it not truth. So you have to really sort of understand that you're already on shaky ground if you feel confused. Anytime somebody, if you ask a direct question and they sort of dance or sort of crab leg around it and aren't direct or forthcoming with information, I'm already on alert. My antenna goes up when that happens, if you're not going to sort of be direct and, you know, forthcoming with information. But really the idea of gaslighting is it's designed to confuse you. Sometimes people who are manipulators or narcissists or sociopaths will also use mirror statements, and deflect. So let's say you say to somebody, you know, we had a fight, I can't breathe. And they go, breathe. I can't breathe. They kind of rob you of your story. So they do this mirror statement and then it makes you confused because you're like, how now I'm on, you know, I used to say to, in my relationship, I used to say, I'm on Houston Street and you keep taking me on avenues A, B, C, and D. Like it would be like, I would be taken on this ride with information and I would become so confused. So if somebody sort of distracts you even from information, that can be a version of gaslighting. So there are subtleties in it that I pay very close attention to now. Mm-hmm. If I ask a question and I don't get a direct answer and somebody starts to dance, I'm already sort of nervous about it. But anything that is designed to confuse you from reality and change what you know to be true can be a version of gaslighting.
I think this kind of abuse, narcissistic abuse or any kind of emotional abuse, is really hard for people to almost like qualify in their life because it's not physical, you know, there's no tangible evidence that it happened. And I think a lot of times victims are nervous about victim shaming or being blamed or people, you know, glossing over what's happened to them because there are no tangible effects. And I think that's what's hard for a lot of people to turn around and ask for help or try or leave, because then people will just not understand why they've left this relationship that to the outside may have seemed so good because you've lied about it for so long. Right. So I think that's what makes it, in my opinion, really hard for some people to leave. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I think the average, it takes people 7 times to extricate themselves from an abusive relationship, whether it's physical or otherwise. But I can tell you that every client that comes to me that has been physically abused makes it a point to tell me that the psychological abuse is far worse because those wounds don't really heal as quickly. Mm-hmm. Most of my clients have trauma. Most of my clients have PTSD or PTSD. It's like a traumatic brain injury. All of them have flashbacks and easy startle reflex and all of the symptoms of PTSD. And so while we're still learning about what narcissistic abuse does to the brain, and it's really very green in terms of data and things that we're, you know, studying, just in my experience and all of, you know, the information I've gathered from my clients, they always tell me that they have flashbacks, and they always tell me that they can barely function and they have a hard time, you know, putting thoughts together. And it's really a challenge for them, especially if they are co-parenting with a narcissist, which is the worst thing that you can ever really experience, in my opinion, because it's like having a personal terrorist. Mm-hmm. They exploit the children and use the children as a way to destroy your, you know, life. And so they have a particularly hard time, especially entering the judicial system where, you know, all of these wounds are opened up and reopened up and is also riddled with narcissists in terms of the court. So it's very hard for survivors because we don't really understand so much about it yet. And we're still learning about so much of it. And you're right. You can't see the wounds. And so it's really hard for people to share their stories. And half the time they think that they're crazy themselves. So they have a hard time convincing others of what, you know, was so hard for them to even realize in the first place.
Right. So some of the stuff that you have studied and that you specialize in is people that are involved in cult relationships or behavior or something like that. Can you talk a little bit about how that is similar to narcissistic abuse?
Yeah. So the cult leader is basically somebody who is controlling and manipulating, isolating the people who are in their group. We saw this with the NXIVM cult. We saw this with, we see this with Scientology and Stolen Youth and others, but they're experience and the trauma that they deal with is really no different than being in a relationship with a narcissist. It's pretty much the exact same playbook. The cult leader generally is somebody who just has the ability to kind of convince more than one person. Generally, the narcissist has a lot of flying monkeys, as we call them, which are sort of like followers anyway. So it's not necessarily a cult of one. There's generally a group of people that are perpetuating the narrative. They could be friends, family members, business associates. The narcissist tends to have almost only transactional relationships. So you see this a lot with CEOs. They tend to sort of climb the ladder because they have a lack of empathy and create a situation where they have like minions or followers and people. So they're really no different. The cult tends to sort of exploit your idea of either a religion or some kind of component in that way that they kind of hook their, you know, that you hook into. So that sort of variable spiritual abuse tends to be a little more pervasive with a cult. But generally, it's the same concept.
I absolutely love that first firing up of the grill on a warm summer evening. Do you or someone else in your home take grilling as seriously as I do? The Burger Perfection Pack is an incredible deal for just $99.99. This exclusive package includes 20 of Omaha Steaks' mouth-watering steak burgers. That's 4 of each of their finest burgers. Pure ground filet mignon, New York strip, ribeye, brisket, and sirloin. Only available at omahasteaks.com. Impress your next dinner party or family cookout with exclusive products not available at grocery stores. all backed by Omaha Steaks 100% money-back guarantee. Get ready for grilling season with the mouth-watering Omaha Steaks Burger Perfection Pack, plus 8 free Wagyu Smash Burgers for just $99.99. Go to omahasteaks.com, and as a bonus, use promo code YUM to get $35 off your order. That's $35 off with promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at ipvanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.
So I wanted to find out so people can really understand that are struggling with this. You went through it. How did you personally get through it and get out of it? How did you even notice that this wasn't right in your life and that you deserved better?
I think it was about 4 months in. There seemed to be some kind of a issue that was sort of blown out of proportion, and it made me realize that there was something wrong. And then the cycle seemed to sort of just repeat itself over and over and over again with no solve. And it was kind of maddening, and I got swept away. I kind of distanced myself from friends, not that they necessarily distanced themselves from me. I also did that. I played a role in that. So it was both of those things. Didn't really participate in my hobbies, quit my job, and just sort of got swept away, was traveling and, you know, concerts and things, and dizzy with all of the resources that he had. And that was really problematic. Kind of rented my house and gave up everything. And it just took over, and I was isolated and confused, and was believing a lot of the things that I was being told. So, you know, I just found myself, I lost myself really. And it was hard because I feel like I'm a strong person.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Like, I think a lot of people too are look at others and say, well, she seems smart. How could she have gotten involved in a relationship that seemed so awful? And how could she be accusing somebody of doing all these things when maybe that's for her benefit because she seems too smart to be manipulated by that? I think that's a common question of a lot of people that fall into these traps and they feel like they can't get out.
Yeah, there are a lot of smart, we saw this with Stolen Youth, one of the people who was abused by Larry in that cult was, I think she was a doctor, or she was just entering medical school or completing medical school.
Is that the thing from Sarah Lawrence? Yes.
And Sarma as well is so intelligent and successful, and Debbie Newell, so successful and intelligent and wonderful and gorgeous. And we see this with men. We see this with Mark Vicente from the Nexium cult. Strong characters, really intelligent, curious people fall victim. And I even almost identified with a male being victimized in some ways because I considered myself sort of a badass and an athlete. And I didn't fit the profile of a victim. I wasn't sort of, you know, in everyone's vision, like shivering in the corner, even though I really was shivering in the corner. I didn't like fit that narrative. And it was really hard because I thought people thought, you know, well, Vanessa, she could never be victimized. Look at her. She's fucking tough. Like, there's no way. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't work that way. I mean, anyone can be victimized.
And did your family, did your friends notice it and say something to you, or you had to really find yourself and find some strength within yourself to leave?
Some people did see it, and I would fight with them because, you know, as you mentioned, I would be like, no, no, no. And I would sort of have his back. But a lot of people subscribed to it like I did and thought, you know, we see this with poets, priests, and politicians. They can kind of kiss babies and stab you in the back. People don't know what's going on behind closed doors is the bottom line. You could have a very dangerous person in your neighborhood and they have the perfect lawn and the perfect family and who the hell knows what's going on. And you see the house that's maybe a little disheveled and you go, oh, probably someone crazy lives there. It is not necessarily this truth. It's you know, people could be rather buttoned up and you have no idea what's going on behind closed doors.
Yeah, it's not as cut and dry as that. So I'm curious because I tend to get in relationships really quickly. Like I don't like dating in general. So like I'll date who I think we might work out with. I have a pretty good idea beforehand. And then I like jump into the relationship on the first date. I'm like, oh my God, this person knows me so well. I really, you know, all that ridiculous stuff. So were you similar to that in this circumstance that it all moved very quickly? Or do you think you gave it a lot of time and you thought you knew this person? And is there a difference? I mean, do people like appear later as someone that they didn't appear at the beginning?
Yeah, this was pretty fast and furious, but I do have clients that will be with someone for a year or two. And there tends to be a milestone that sort of triggers a change or a shift in the relationship, like an engagement, a marriage, a baby. In some way, when the stakes get higher or they own you more, or they have more control over you, or they notice that they have sort of a hierarchical role in your life, then they sort of turn up the dial. Mm-hmm. So it really varies. But for me, it was sort of fast and furious.
Yeah. And I mean, you're, you know, in this line of work, you can confirm that that's like not the best way to get into a relationship, right? I mean, people always say you should take it slow.
Well, I don't know. I have this weird sort of idea that I don't want to waste so much time. So I try to push buttons and create boundaries really quickly to sort of test them. Mm-hmm. You know, like I often joke, I read somewhere that, you know, psychopaths don't do contagious yawning. So my son and I will joke about how I'll just yawn on our first date just to be like, oh, let's see if they, you know. So like, I'm trying to like glean the information quick. And I'm trying to like, you know, almost like they don't do well with like illness. So I'm like, we joke like, oh, I should fake a seizure to see like how they handle it. You know, like I'm really sort of want to know sooner. So I might say no to something or push a button so I can see how they react. I pay attention to how they treat staff and how they drive and how they walk. And, you know, because, you know, these people tend to be one-uppers. So they're line cutters and they're rude to their business associates. So I try to like, you know, pay attention to all of those nuanced behaviors early on.
Wait, I love what you're saying here because I didn't know these things. So you're telling me somebody with narcissistic abusive tendencies doesn't like sick people?
They don't do well when the fantasy is fractured.
I see.
So they live in a fantasy and they live in a bubble and they think, you know, everything has to sort of look a certain way. So if you, you know, put your hair in a messy bun and you look a hot mess and, you know, you have the flu, you will see them behave differently because they don't really want to deal with any fracturing of this fantasy.
Wow. Okay. What are some other ones? I liked all these things. They're line cutters. Okay. I know a couple of those. What else? What else?
They tend to drive very fast. They have to sort of win everything. So these are people that are extremely competitive and vindictive. So if they have to get back at somebody or they have to drive faster or cut a line, it's like these, it's almost like a child. You know, they sort of behave as like a child, like they have to win in every little thing.
Or so, they think they're better than everybody else and just, yeah. It's beneath them to stand in line maybe.
Yeah.
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 Interesting. Okay. So, but you did end up, you know, falling enough for this person that you got engaged, correct?
Yes.
And was that during like this makeup phase that happened, or you were still kind of okay during those times?
It kind of was, I would call it almost like a 2-week cycle. There was just constantly some kind of problem. It was very volatile and chaotic and drama filled all the time. It was fully exhausting. So I don't remember exactly if that was the case at that time in terms of the engagement, but the cycle just seemed to just spin around. It was up, down, roller coaster.
And did you feel when you got engaged, like this was as a makeup thing, or you were like, okay, well, this will make it better and we will now be committed? Cause I know, I mean, listen, I've been engaged a couple of times and, I remember one time when I got engaged to this person who I shouldn't have, it was very uncomfortable and I knew it was wrong, but it was their way to sort of make up with me. And it just, it all was awful. I was nervous to tell my friends that I was engaged. I mean, all of it should have, you know, rang a lot of bells at the time. But for you, what was your experience then? Were you happy? Were you telling your family?
I think I was pretty well isolated, but I think at the time I thought I was happy, I would say, at that moment, you know, in time, but it wasn't real. It was part of his gaining control of me. But I think at the time I thought, you know, it was a whirlwind. So I thought it was, you know.
So how did you end up being able to get out and be okay? I mean, it sounds like you had a hard time and you were talking about shaking and all this stuff, but what happened at the end for you that you were able to sort of break free, whether or not you wanted to at the moment?
There were a lot of demands for intimacy, and it seemed to be it was insatiable. And I remember thinking that there was something wrong there. So I left one day. I called my girlfriend and I was like, I have to get out of here. And I fled, went to my mother's house and stayed there for 3 months during COVID, which was really scary. My tenant wouldn't leave, even though she was not COVID affected. So I had to pay her $10,000 to get out of my house. And I finally got home. And then it was like, I had to climb out of this hole and do a lot of healing during pandemic, which was really a gift because I had to sit in my own shit. And it was like the muck of, like, you know, being alone and like trying to just cope. I mean, I developed all of these coping mechanisms, you know, just kind of candles and music and just flooding myself with like self-love. And I spent 2 years doing that before I even would think about dating. And it was a gift, you know. It sounds terrible. Obviously, COVID was a horror for so many people, but it just, in my case personally, it forced me to sit with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And at that time, is it hard to break for you? Was it hard to break the chains of being with someone you had been with that you were engaged to? Like, how were you able to say, I'm not talking to this person anymore?
I would say it was probably about 9 days. And then I started to do a lot of research on what this was. Even just silly things like TikTok, I was learning. I was like, holy shit, I didn't even know this is a thing. Mm-hmm. And I began to just study and get into the clinical work and study Sandra Brown, who refers to this relationship as a relationship of inevitable harm, which really scared me. And she actually created credentialing for therapists. So there's continuing ed credits that she offers around it. And it's so clever. And it was very exciting to sort of latch onto the clinical piece. But it took a while for me to kind of undo some of the damage that was done to my brain in terms of like the wiring. It took a while for me to even see what the truth was. For a while, because I was being so well mirrored, I kept thinking I was the narcissist, because they sort of are like a chameleon. They become like what you want them to be, or a version of yourself. They adopt your hobbies and all of this. So it was like this enmeshment that I had to undo. Mm-hmm. But it took quite a while for me to do that. But then when I really was clear about it, I was now involved in this judicial shit where I was just being destroyed. And, you know, he told me he was going to destroy me. So it just kept on, that kept sort of living on. It wasn't easy to sever from. And a lot of my clients really can't get away, even when they desperately almost cut their arm off to just, you know, get away. They tend to disallow that. It's just hoovering and back and forth and it's ongoing. It's like, it just really is hard to get away from.
Yeah. And I think it's hard to get away from emotionally, but also, I mean, I think there's a financial component sometimes, like, you know, women especially have been leaning on this man for, you know, whatever financial reasons, almost like a marriage, you know, and a lot of these are marriages, right? But they can't walk away because they're scared of who they're going to become or how they're going to fend for themselves when this person has almost created this safety net for them, which they didn't even realize was abusive, but that's how they were being held there to begin with. And I think that's really a lot of why a lot of women don't leave, or people don't leave, because they're so enmeshed in that person's life and the things that person has provided for them. And the threat of that being taken away is almost to them scarier or worse than, you know, getting rid of them in general. And I think a lot of narcissistic abusers don't want to let you go. Like, even though you guys may have been having some legal issues or whatever, were you also hearing from him in terms of he wanted to get back with you or apologize or make you feel better, or is always at this point about pushing you down?
At first, it was a little of both. And But I think really for them, it's about control. Mm-hmm. They have to sort of have their foot on your throat. They don't want you to speak your truth. It scares them. We see this with Scientology and other cults where they sort of disallow you from looking at the media or the press. They want to keep you silenced so that they can continue to move forward and perpetuate this violence onto the next supply or victim. So the idea of being exposed or sharing the truth about about their bad behavior and their characteristics is horrifying for them. And so it's treacherous to navigate as an advocate for victims now, because you just don't understand what they're capable of in terms of impulsivity and how dangerous they can be. So I don't blame people for being afraid and sort of, you know, just sort of saving themselves and getting away to the extent that they can, because it's scary to navigate all of the things that come with getting away from a cult leader or a narcissist.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Sometimes in life, we're faced with tough choices and the path forward isn't always clear. I personally have been through a lot of trying times in my life, trauma, grief, for example. I think those are universal themes that people can really understand. I lost my fiance, Andy, in 9/11, and the pain was unbearable. Since then, I've gone through other traumas that didn't feel as big, but I still needed to talk to somebody, and having somebody I didn't know that well, but was really good at listening, felt like the right thing to do. And it was so helpful to me. I love that I can have someone to talk to that isn't one of my close friends that I can just confide in and feel like it's between us. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. I signed up for this just the other day. I've already been matched to the most perfect therapist for me. I'm excited because I've already touched base with them and I have my first appointment in a couple days. So I will let you guys know how that goes, but I'm super excited to try this service. Let therapy be your map with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/understood today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/understood. Give online therapy a try at betterhelp.com/understood and get on your way to being your best self.
How was that for you then to, you know, be trying to get away within your own personal life and what went on between the two of you guys and maybe your family or friends that knew the story, but then all of a sudden he's dating somebody as famous, you know, in this world of reality TV, and then your story becomes everyone's story that they want to hear about. Did that make it worse for you?
I had a moment where I realized that I probably, through talking to so many of my clients and friends and followers and exes of his, that I was almost, it was my duty to sort of do something and speak out because I didn't have a child with him. And I thought, because I'm a clinician, I had this moment, I was like, oh God. And my son was like, Mom, why don't you just, you know, move on and not do anything? I'm like, I think I have to speak out because I had this credentialing and I had a voice, and I wasn't, you know, my son was older. So I thought, you know, I don't have the vulnerability of a small child co-parenting with somebody. And I thought, oh God, I can't really be quiet, can I? And it was very much part of my character to sort of be an advocate for a long time. So I knew that it was almost like a calling, that I had no choice and I was going to push forward. And that's when I sort of got the idea for the run, and I sort of moved forward with advocacy because I couldn't see myself, you know, doing that, being quiet about it.
So yeah, I was going to ask you about that run. You ran almost 300 miles, right? To bring awareness to narcissistic abuse. Tell me what that was like, how you came up with that idea, how long it took, all that stuff.
I came up with that idea on a run randomly, I started talking to, because I'm a two-time Ironman, so I was already an athlete, and I started talking to some of my runner friends, my friend Bob, who did Ultraman, and my friend JC, who's run, I don't know, over 300 marathons. And I was like, do you think I can run across New York in a wedding dress? And they were like, fuck yeah. So I was like, okay. And we just kind of, I thought the wedding dress would get attention. I thought it was sort of, you know, was a symbol of what gets exploited, that fantasy and all of that. And I just got a team together and we just gave it a go. And it was really transformative. I have to say it was very healing. And so many people reached out to me and, you know, were sharing their stories. I mean, it just was incredible to hear all of the people that had been victimized saying, go, you know, please, you know, I can't really speak out, but I'm just following you. And, you know, this is so amazing. And so it was, it checked a lot of boxes for me. It was healing for me. And I think people felt validated in seeing it. So it was great.
Was it a consecutive run or you did different states or how did it work? And did you run with people by yourself? I saw videos of you by yourself, but I'm assuming some people wanted to join in.
It was 285 miles from Oswego to Manhattan. So it was from the tip of New York down to Manhattan and it was consecutive. So it was something like 25 miles a day for, I don't know, 11 days. I don't know the math, but we did approximately a marathon a day for 11 days. And then we did subsequently do New Jersey, which was only 60 miles, and then Connecticut, which was only 60 miles. And I think we're going to try to do Florida next year. I did mostly run alone. Some people joined me here, there, and everywhere virtually and also in person. And I want to try to, you know, kind of get a relay going and pass the baton. I do have some injuries now, so I'm getting older and I don't really want to keep doing it. And it was particularly hot in Connecticut this year. I was like, oh, this is such bullshit. It's so hard. So I would love to sort of get other people and kind of like gift this, you know, concept to someone else and sort of let some others do it. But, you know, it's logistically challenging, but we, you know, we'll continue to do what we can.
Yeah. That was great. And people donated to the cause or how did other people get involved?
There were donations accepted for tellatherapist.org, which is my nonprofit. And we are working towards a few different things, an app, potentially even opening up a center. We have found that the domestic violence centers don't really do such a great job of describing the vernacular that helps to validate victims. So it would be like if you went to the hospital and someone said, you're sick, you would say, well, what do I have? So they don't really use the language that we think helps. So we're sort of working towards a few different things, but it went to the nonprofit.
That's great. So can you just go over really quickly the positive things, like what are the signs of a healthy relationship or what should you be looking for or trying to create to establish a healthy relationship in your opinion?
I think a healthy relationship is a relationship where you can be yourself and you don't have to live with any of those falsities or the fantasy lifestyle that others sort of are perpetuating. I think somebody who is able to be vulnerable and truthful, like for me, I will share in my experience about my trauma. I think it's somebody who is sort of not telling you things that are confusing. So if you find yourself in confusing conversations like gaslighting, as I mentioned, that's a bad thing. So somebody who's sort of matter of fact and fluid in their communication or somebody who's a good communicator, somebody who has maybe their own lifestyle, somebody who has hobbies of their own, they don't adopt yours and kind of get involved so much in your experience. It's almost like you want to be on the same, in the same direction on two different paths. Somebody who doesn't tell you that they need you, you know, that they're just very fulfilled in their own life and you are fulfilled in your own life. And then you kind of add value to each other.
Right. Like they become an asset almost instead of a liability, in your life.
Somebody who has empathy. One of the ways that I sort of assess for empathy is I might, ask them about, you know, if they've ever been in love or if they have a beloved pet from childhood, or ask them about a time where maybe they were upset about something and they share whether they've cried and what that was about. The, you know, sort of ground zero for the narcissist is a lack of empathy. So the biggest red flag is a lack of empathy. So looking for somebody who expresses empathy and, because sometimes they can fake it. So you really have to be really careful. I mean, these people can be really good actors. We see this a lot in Hollywood, actually, where they can kind of put on the waterworks and, oh, you know, it's like, so you have to be really careful about what empathy actually looks like and how they experience empathy. So yeah, those are some of the things. Somebody who is always the same person behind closed doors and in front of others, right? They don't change. Their personality doesn't shift. It's not like, oh, they get home and they can be a shithead. It's like, you know, you're always this person all the time.
Yeah.
I think somebody who is consistent would be a good green flag.
Yeah. Okay. That's really helpful. I think those are good things to look out for. And just out of curiosity, is it hard for you now to trust people? And yeah, I mean, just even friends, that why they're coming in your life. I mean, reality TV has taken over so many people's lives in a way that I think is unhealthy almost. I mean, the fact that, you know, everybody was talking about Vanderpump Rules and the scandal from that and like making that like the top story, even in the New York Times, I thought was nuts. I thought the level of bullying that went on in that trio there. And then all the friends that jumped on to, in my opinion, it looked like they were so triggered by things that were, that they had gone through or going on in their own lives and just took it out on, you know, other people. I just thought it was so inappropriate, and I thought it was really unsafe for people to witness that. And then, people watching to like jump on that and really that, to me, that was abusive. Like everything that went on, obviously in a cheating scandal, you know, that's something that affects a lot of people, but really in reality that affected those three people. And the fact that the whole world got to like express their anger and emotion, I thought was really unhealthy, especially for Raquel, who, you know, if something ever happened to her, I mean, who takes responsibility for that? Is that Bravo? Is that the, you know, the people that are, you know, sitting there calling her moron and a whore and all these things? I mean, those are really awful words that stick with you forever, you know, and obviously she feels bad about a mistake that she made. But so anyways, to go back, I just think that what's gone on in reality TV is so nuts. So I'm curious if it's hard for you because people may want to befriend you or even date you for those reasons because they think you're involved in that.
It was very hard for me to trust people. I lost a lot of friends after this happened because it was, well, nothing happened to me. And so that was really hard for me. I lost a lot of friends, but it was also silver lining because when I really looked around and I saw who was true blue, it was such a gift, and it's so liberating to not have to, you know, put on airs or anything like that. But I love what you're saying about bullying, because that is the whole point of my work, is that, you know, people are so unkind, and empathy is something that we need to get back into. Dr. Ramani, who's a dear friend of mine now, talks about this in her book, Don't You Know Who I Am? And we have really lost touch with being decent and kind and careful. And certainly social media and the bullying that goes on. I mean, the things people have said to me, the things people that I watch say to others in the reality TV, it is horrifying to see how people talk to each other. I mean, I would never, I might could think something really disgusting, but I would never just take to a keyboard and be like, you know,
sure.
I it's so gross to see how people behave. And we really need to sort of get back into that Sesame Street mindset and kind of like practice love a little bit more. I mean, that would be the one thing that I think I share with a lot of my colleagues in this space, which is that, you know, we don't really cultivate the love and empathy anymore that we really should. People have lost that. They're just out there in this individualistic, capitalistic society, bullying and pushing for resources. And it's really gross.
And actually, that brings up another question from what you were just talking about. I'm curious if you had to be a sort of deal with victim shaming from all the people that are obsessed with that other side, right? With the people who are fans of, you know, those two, did they try and victim shame you and blame you and be nasty to you?
I've gotten a lot of messages that are just brutal. Like, you old hag, you know, like just kind of, it reminds me of some of those, what is it? Jimmy Fallon does the tweets. When you read the tweets, and it's like so funny. Like the things people say, like somebody said to me, you know, I wouldn't even trust her to do my laundry. And my new boyfriend was like, well, that's funny because like you do really good laundry. And I was like, thank you. And it became this whole conversation about laundry is so stupid and innocuous, but
the things people say are just so ridiculous just because they think it's going to hurt you and like put you in a corner sucking your thumb. And you're like, wait, what? But somebody recently,
I try to rise above it.
Yeah. Somebody recently told me that you have to think of that as like a fan club, like all the people that you live in their head, just call them your fans because, you know, it's just so ridiculous and you're not thinking about them, but they are obsessed with how they can tear you down. So, but those comments of like, you old hag and you're so ugly and, you know, you would never be worthy of blah, blah, blah. It's like, you got to laugh at that. It's like, who are you to be commenting, you know? Yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, I try not to let it get to me. I mean, some things are kind of below the belt, you know, and I really feel offended for a lot of the victims and people who get victimized shouldn't have to deal with that. So it is kind of gross.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't know me or someone like me and the story that I have, you know, just stay quiet. You don't have to. I mean, it's just gross. Like if you know me and you don't like me, that's fine.
I totally agree, which by the way, is why I chose to have the show because so many people would, you know, made assumptions about me or other people that where the media has sort of narrated their story. And in my opinion, I really felt like, listen, if I put myself out there and people choose to not like me, fair game, totally fine. But, you know, if it's based on what other people are writing or facts and news articles that people are writing, that's not okay with me. I want to be able to tell my own story. I want to be able to share who I am. And I believe that people will be on my side and like me. And if they don't, I totally get that too. Like, that's cool. I'm not for everyone. Just like, you know, everyone has their opinion on who they want to be friends with. So I get that. But I think it's really important to tell your story. I think it's important to stand on your own 2 feet, be brave. People, you know, everyone has a reason for doing something because of what they've gone through. And I think people need to be more empathetic and realize that, you know, everyone is suffering in some way in their own head. And they just, you know, would love to have people that like are on their side or at least let them go through it as opposed to pushing them down. Cause we have our own insecurities that we, you know, that we get on ourselves for. So it's harder to hear it from other people, you know?
Yeah. I hope that, you know, we can kind of make a change and people can start to be less judgmental. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going through something. You just don't know what anybody's dealing with on any given day.
Yeah, that's right. So you did mention there that you are seeing somebody new. Was that hard to get into a new relationship and be able to trust or how's that going?
It took me 3 years. So it was like kind of, and it's still scary. I'm still, you know, I still get super triggered, and have PTSD. I was diagnosed with PTSD when I was 25 from other things, but, this was, it is particularly challenging. I have clients that have been victimized upwards of 5 times, you know, these beautiful, wealthy women come into my, session. And I'm just thinking, oh, here we go. Cause it, you could see just the potential for them to be victimized. But I'm just trying to figure it out myself. I don't have all the answers. I try to be mindful and careful and trust myself. And I try to put all of my trusted friends' eyes on it too. So sort of, they're paying attention. So there's sort of an army of us that's going to disallow, you know, that from happening, hopefully.
That's great. So I wish you the best of luck in that. All right. So now tell people where they can find you, where if they want to hire you, they can, you know, find you on online, whatever it is.
Sure. So you can find my psychotherapy services at TELLATherapist.net. I have 2 clinicians that work under me that specialize in narcissistic abuse and 2 other clinicians. I am licensed in 4 states, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and Florida. And then I have a nonprofit, teletherapist.org.
Great. And just out of curiosity, do you do work with people that are suffering from issues with codependence? I feel like that's something that is very similar and people do. I feel like that's a really important thing for people to sort of work on.
Yeah, absolutely. So that would be a conversation around the people pleasing, approval seeking stuff that we talked about. So very in line with the cognitive behavioral therapy, where we kind of develop that strong sense of self so that you kind of step into your power. There's a little bit of a life coachy component to a lot of the work that we do, because we understand that power and autonomy is a way to get away from these kinds of toxic relationships and developing boundaries and understanding where boundaries start, which is basically with you, less about what you don't want, but what you really do want.
Yeah.
Sort of starting there. So yeah, codependency is something that we can definitely help you with.
And do you get into love addiction, sex addiction, all those things as well?
Absolutely. Addiction to attention is something that so many people have a hard time with, certainly with social media. Mm-hmm. So again, dealing with like this radical self-love and sort of nurturing yourself. And certainly with trauma, we want to almost just like practice forgiving yourself and being kind to yourself, almost like overdoing it.
Right.
So we get into a lot of almost like life coaching a little bit.
Okay. I love that. So, and I think people really, there's a stigma with love addiction or sex addiction and people don't think that's a real thing. I truly believe in it. I've, you know, gone through it myself. I've been in rehab for it. And I went on tour with Dr. Drew to discuss it, and bring awareness to it, because in my opinion, that is where a lot of other addictions stem from, because people aren't dealing with, you know, this need to replace sort of intensity, for love. Like they get them mixed up and people, you know, it really becomes hard to function sometimes. And then you go on all these tangents and you get into other forms of addiction that are more tangible. But again, like we were talking about before, love addiction and sex addiction are not things that are necessarily tangible where you can say, oh yeah, I'm smoking a pipe, you know? So it, but it can affect your life. It's really debilitating to a lot of people and gets them down a path where they end up quitting their job and losing their job and losing their friends, losing their kids. So it's really dangerous. I think it's great that you focus on that. So anyone struggling with anything similar to what we've been talking about, definitely reach out to Vanessa, even just to get some information on where you can go from here. I think that's really important. And what's your Instagram too, so people can find you there?
Sure. It's at Vanessa Reiser LCSW.
Okay. And then if you're, are you going to consider doing another run this year or?
I think we're going to do a run next year, maybe October in Florida. So we'll try to traverse the skinniest part of Florida.
Amazing. Okay. Well, I live in Florida now, so we'll have to keep in touch and maybe I'll do a little running with you. I can't really even run to the corner and back, but maybe I have a whole year to train. So we'll look forward to it.
There you go.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Anything else you want to go over before we end here?
No, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay. I wish you the best. And I really appreciate everything that you're doing for this space. And I love watching you on Instagram and seeing your messages. I think it's really important. So I'm glad that we were able to connect.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at info@misunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled M-I-S-S, understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.
This episode sponsored by IPVanish. IPVanish protects every device you own, your phone, your laptop, your smart TV. If it connects to the internet, it should be protected. IPVanish encrypts your connection and masks your IP address, helping keep your browsing private at home and on public Wi-Fi. Stream with added privacy. Browse securely. Connect with confidence. Right now, save 83% off the 2-year plan. Get started today at IPVanish.com/audio and take control of your privacy with IPVanish.